Welcome to the TARDIS Library, a place to talk comics, novels, audios and more from the worlds of Doctor Who.
G'day everyone, Rob Irwin here and welcome to another edition of the TARDIS Library, coming to you a little earlier than I thought this episode would be, but I guess in the last episode you would have noticed we didn't have as many comic reviews as normal, and as soon as that episode went out, two more comic reviews came in, as always happens, one from Jeremy and one from Matt, and I thought, you know what, I might grab those and do a bit of talking at the start of the episode and boom, another episode of the TARDIS Library can go out so you can hear these reviews pretty much at the same time as these comics are going out, in this case a Ninth Doctor and a Tenth Doctor comic. Before we get to those, though, I'd like to do a bit of a spiel here. I've recently bought one of the About Time books, and some of you out there might be saying, well, that's about time, because these books have been written a long time ago. This particular volume that I'm looking at here is from 2004. They're all still in print, though. They're from Mad Norwegian Press, and basically what the About Time series is a series of unauthorized guidebooks to Doctor Who. Now, you might think, well, I've seen these before. We've seen, you know, there were the First Doctor, Second Doctor, Third Doctor handbooks and so on. There was, gosh, the Discontinuity Guide. There were, I think, even Target put out some very slender volumes that were guides to Doctor Who back in the day. And everyone seems to have a crack at it. But these books, the About Time books, you may have heard about because they're written, on the whole, by two guys. One is Tat Wood and the other is Lawrence Miles. Now, for people who read the Virgin New Adventures or some of the BBC Eighth Doctor Adventures, Lawrence Miles needs no introduction. He is an author who has written some of the best Doctor Who novels over the years. Indeed, it's quite controversial to say, but it's nonetheless true that many of the ideas that he put into novels over the last 10-20 years have ended up in Doctor Who in some shape or form. Now, I don't know whether that's just coincidence, but he's come up with some very imaginative ideas at times, and mysteriously very, very, very similar ideas have popped up in Doctor Who. Anyway, he and Tat Wood have put together a lot of these books. Unfortunately, something has happened to the relationship, and Lawrence isn't involved with the series anymore. And in fact, Tat has even gone back and redone one of the earlier books, and now Lawrence Miles is not even on the cover as the author. He's just there for additional material. But let's put that aside for the moment. You want to know about the books themselves, right? Why should you buy these? Well, they are very, very in-depth, as well as telling you about, you know, what the story's about and some, you know, trivia here and there. These also go into a lot of detail. They're very well written, and you can pull out a lot of information on each individual episode, as well as reading a lot of essays, which are spread liberally throughout the book as well. And I want to read from one of these essays, just at random. I mean, this book, which is... Let me hold it up. This is About Time number 5, covering 1980 to 1984, seasons 18 to 21. This has a bunch of essays in it, many of them talking about, obviously, John Nathan Turner and the era, because this is a large chunk of the John Nathan Turner era. So here's one of the essays, the John Nathan Turner era, what was the difference? It was clear from the start that something had changed. The new title sequence was a big clue, Natch. But by 1980, the old time tunnel opening to Doctor Who had been around for 7 years, long enough that a generation had grown up taking it for granted in the same way that, say, the telephone dialing tone. For those of us who were 8 or 9 or 10, the new Starfield was puzzling, but it was only the beginning. The rest of the leisure hive left us feeling a little bewildered. Not that we'd have been able to vocalise it properly, but there were things about it that seemed new and odd and even scary. It looked and sounded peculiar and even seemed to move in a peculiar way, though not so much as ladder stories in season 18. And since those that are 8 or 9 or 10 don't have a tendency to look at the names on the end credits, the fact that a new producer had taken over simply wasn't an explanation. Besides, even if it had been, even if you're old enough to remember Williams taking over from Hinchcliffe and to realise what a new man at the top meant, then that gap between the Horns of Nymon and this seemed far, far wider than the gap between the Talons of Wang Chiang and the Horror of Fang Rock. The late John Nathan Turner was the last producer of the original series of Doctor Who. He oversaw the program for more than a third of its lifetime, and it was on his watch that it floundered and died. This has made him the object of unparalleled hatred and fandom, and anyone with even the slightest connection to the Doctor Who underworld will know of the various slaggings off and death threats he received in the fan press during his reign. A fair amount of this stick was justified, as even the most generous viewer has to accept that the mid to late 80s saw a string of ugly, misguided decisions that not only hastened the program's demise, but seriously damaged the public's memories of what the series had been in its prime, whenever you think that was. But here we're not talking about 1985 or 1986 or 1987. Whatever mistakes Nathan Turner may have eventually made, the fact remains that in 1980, a great many people thought the program was in need of a renaissance and that the new man did provide it. And I'll stop there. The essay itself goes on and on and on over many pages, and that's just one of the many essays in the book. So, to summarise, these books are a fantastic reference for people who might not know much about stories. It'll take you right through from what happens in the story to who put it together, as I say, the trivia, all that fun basic stuff, but also delves quite deep. I mean, if you've ever read a Lawrence Miles novel, you know he's a bit of a deep guy, and Tat Wood, it seems, is an academic of some kind. So between the two, they produce some wonderful, wonderful copy. The books themselves are much bigger than a paperback. They are paperback in format, but they are sort of an oversized paperback. They're quite heavy, quite weighty. If I look to see how many pages is in this, gosh, it's well over 300. It's about 320-something. So I've recently picked this up. I'm really enjoying it. I want to go back and maybe pick up a few more from different eras. But this was the era, for me, I guess, that I remember maybe not the most fondly, but it is an era that resonates for me quite a bit. It takes in, obviously, the last season of Tom Baker, all of the Davison era, and, of course, Colin Baker pops up in the final story of the Davison era as well in The Twin Dilemma. So it's a really interesting era. It's the book I wanted to start with. And it's one of the books that Lawrence Miles has contributed with Tat Wood, so I wanted his input as well. I didn't want one of the Tat Wood-only books. If you've not heard of this About Time series, it might be about time, there's that joke again, that you got into it. These are well worth your time, well worth a look. Pick one up based on your favourite era, and I think you'll learn a bit, and you'll be thoroughly entertained by the essays, and even the writing in general is quite witty. It zings off the page, even when they're just talking about episodes in general. It's fresh, it feels good, and although not authorised, I think that's not so much a bad thing, actually. I don't think half the stuff that's said in these would actually appear in an authorised publication. I think this is precisely the kind of thing unauthorised books were made for. Anyway, that's my little blurb on the About Time series, and specifically this one, about seasons 18 to 21. If you've read them, why not write in and let us know? Hello at thedwshow.net. And now, without any further ado, let's get into some comic reviews. Let's hear from Matt first, and then Jeremy, about some new 9th and 10th Doctor comics, and I'll see you after that.
This is Matt Barber. I occasionally appear on the Blue Box podcast, and I've been recruited by Australians to review the latest in the series of the Ninth Doctor adventures in the graphic novels. This is part two of Official Secrets, written by Kevin Scott, and the artist is Chris Bolson. It's a continuation of a story in which the Ninth Doctor, Jack, and Rose travel to the UK, specifically Bristol, in the 1970s or 80s, they don't make clear. And there they encounter a series of extravagant Godzilla-like monsters. They meet some old friends in the form of UNIT, and they basically try to uncover who's controlling these monsters, where the monsters have come from. It's good. It's I'm enjoying it still. I'm liking the way that Kevin Scott has somehow made a Christopher Eccleston story that feels consistent with his time in the show. He's made a UNIT story that feels somehow consistent with all UNIT stories. And that's not easy. So the UNIT stories varied from, you know, from the Web of Fear through season 7, through mid-Pertwee, to the point where the Brigadier is basically a clown. And somehow Kevin Scott has created this unit story that, well, unifies the different eras of that production. And all of this has somehow been taken to a new level. So, as with the last story I reviewed, there's a real recognition that this is an opportunity to inject a degree of spectacle, big budget spectacle, into these stories. So, whilst it feels like an Eccleston story and the character of Eccleston is consistent with how he appeared on screen, what he does is something that Russell T. Davis could have never have done, and Scott's produced this extraordinary, visual, visceral, special effects laden spectacular. So the things I liked about it, I like Eccleston's character, the characterization of Eccleston's doctor. Kevin Scott gets his kind of remoteness perfectly. He doesn't appear in this that much. Half the story is given over to Captain Jack and Benton. I was slightly disappointed that there was a lack of flirtation between those two characters. I felt that was a good opportunity to put Benton into a unique situation. But then when Eccleston does appear, there's one particular moment where a young boy is almost drowned and has been resuscitated by a doctor. And our doctor, the Ninth Doctor, initially appears to be concerned, but actually is more interested in the boy's T-shirt, which happens to show one of the creatures. The other things I like about it, I like the way that Kevin Scott is drip-feeding us nostalgia through this story. He doesn't just give us a unit story as a fait accompli right from the beginning. So the characters are slowly drip-fed through to us. So we have Harry Sullivan and Benton, and then halfway through this story, the main man appears in all of his glory. So this isn't the Battlefield Brigadier or the Sarah Jane Brigadier who appears. This is the Brigadier in his heyday. And I think that works really well, that kind of rationing out of the unit side of things. It makes it more like an exploration of the unit era rather than another installment in the unit era. And I think actually it's one of the only ways that Kevin Scott could have done it without it feeling like there was a kind of a collision between the new series and the old series, between the Russell T. Davis Eccleston and the old one. It's interesting to compare this with the unit from World War III. I always felt that didn't really feel like unit. I don't mind the story apart from the Slovene, but the unit there felt like a nod towards something that didn't exist. I think the great thing about these comics is there is a timelessness in it. You can have Nick Courtney appearing without having aged, and that really does make it feel like a unit story. So the modern unit stories feel like they're about this institution, the security institution, whereas the old stories had what's now a cliche to say it, but had this family feel. And that's very much here. Kevin Scott isn't trying to deconstruct it. He's not trying to explode it or update it or rewrite it. He's very affectionately and nostalgically presented it and grafted it into an Eccleston story. I also loved the presentation. I'm a big fan of Harry Sullivan anyway, and thought that on screen his character development was very limited. He was really just there for the Doctor to shout at or to be menaced by a giant clam. Here he's got the same kind of British buffoonishness and slightly sort of misogynistic, patronising quality to him. But there's that kind of lovable side. And actually, and I won't spoil it, but the cliffhanger to the story comes after a sequence where the monster, pretty much a giant sea monster, pretty much destroys the Clifton Suspension Bridge, but the actual cliffhanger is a much smaller affair and really gives another side to Harry Sullivan that perhaps we haven't seen before. And also, I think it's less of a cliffhanger and more a sort of a cheer out loud moment. And it's difficult to describe it without spoiling it. But yes, overall, I'm really enjoying this, and I'm really buying into this kind of nostalgia. And I'm keen to see the final installment.
Hello, this is Jeremy B. Mett from Doctor Who Panel to Panel, online's premier podcast exclusively about Doctor Who comics. I come to you onto the Doctor Who show to give you a review of the 10th Doctor, the newest issue, which is year 2, issue number 16. This is a continuation of the story that's been going on for a little while now. It was written by excellent writer Nick Abadzis, with art by new regular artist Giorgio Sposito. And the usual crew continues on with coloring and lettering and editing and everything else. This story continues on from the previous issue, which, let me give you kind of a quick rundown as to what happened the last issue. On the Shining Horizon, Dorothy and Gabby are in serious danger. After Anubis started exhibiting erratic and disturbing behavior, their worst nightmares came true as Sutek returned, filling his son with his disembodied consciousness and transcending death. Sutek's deadly plan brings even more terror when a phalanx of the Doctor's godlike foes return from a rift in space-time, and they're out for blood. Which is how we ended the last issue. The story continues on with the Doctor being able to stop these godlike beings from coming through by putting them into a hysteresis, a time loop, if you will, to stop them from coming through. Meanwhile, Sutek, his full essence, still trapped in the dimension where the Doctor trapped him before, is working with his son Anubis, which is Sutek is controlling that body, for lack of a better term, still trying to break his way through. Sutek goes on a little spiel about remembering the Fourth Doctor trapping him outside of the universe and what has gone on in this place and how he's been trying to fight his way back. And now that Anubis is in our universe, he is using his son and to transfer his power through to Anubis to help him be able to escape and back into our universe, get his full body back. I don't want to spoil too much about this issue, mainly because it just came out and some of you may not have read it, but for those of you classic Doctor Who fans like myself, we get to see a character from the Sylvester McCoy or 7th Doctor era make his comic debut, I do believe, and in a very interesting way, trying to help Sutek with his plan. Meanwhile, the 10th Doctor has to try to come up with a way to stop Sutek from making it through. Unfortunately, in doing so, Gabby is kind of being coerced by Sutek to help him create an opening to make it through to our universe. On the opposite side of the coin, Cindy and her friend are... The Doctor has ordered them away to the TARDIS, but of course they're not going to listen to what the Doctor says because they want to be able to help because they believe the Doctor needs help. I don't want to spoil too much about it, but basically this issue is all about Sutek trying to come through to our universe and the Doctor and Cindy trying to stop Sutek from doing so. And the story ends with a kind of an interesting cliffhanger because we're leading up to the finale of this story and the finale of year 2. My review of this issue, it was an enjoyable issue to read. Nick Abadzis is telling a really interesting story. I know when I reviewed this last time, I said I was kind of confused by what was going on. This issue, I felt more like I knew what was going on. However, I do believe that this story is definitely going to be one that when the collected edition comes out, I'm going to want to read it all in one or two sittings, just because I think reading it from start to finish all in one go will help make a lot more sense of this story. As far as the artwork goes, Giorgio Sposito is hitting on all cylinders. The artwork in this story is exquisite. I enjoy it from start to finish. She seems to be coming into her own as far as drawing the 10th Doctor and Gabby and Cindy and her appearance or her likeness of Sutek or her look of Sutek, I think, fits dead on with the character that we're familiar with from classic Doctor Who. Plus, she also has done an excellent job of creating the look of some of these other gods that have been trapped in this other worldly realm where Sutek has been. I also have to commend the coloring on this issue. The coloring was amazing on this issue and made a lot of this other dimension where Sutek is make it appear to be another dimension. And a lot of the coloring brought out some of the special effects in this that happened in this story, which I thought was very well done. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this story ends up. Kudos to Nick Abadzis for bringing this story full circle and coming up to what I think is going to be a really engaging and entertaining conclusion. Giorgio Sposito, good job on the artwork. I can't wait to see the next issue. And if you haven't been reading this 10th Doctor story, definitely go out and grab the issues if you can. Otherwise, definitely pick up the trade paperback or the hardcover. And if you want to hear more reviews of other Doctor Who comics that I review on my podcast, or if you want to hear some interesting interviews, such as one I just did recently with Martin Garrity and Adrian Salmon about the new animated Power of the Daleks that everybody has been watching, be sure to check out my podcast. Go to iTunes and do a search for Doctor Who Panel to Panel. Look for me on Facebook as either Jeremy Bement or Doctor Who Panel to Panel. You can like and friend both. You can also find me on Twitter at Doctor Who P2P, 2 being the number 2. And last but not least, if you want to find some back listening material, some old episodes of Doctor Who Panel to Panel, go to archive.org, do a search for Doctor Who Panel to Panel, and you can find some of those. Oh, and last but not least, my website. Make sure you check out my website, which is DoctorWhoComics.com. So until next issue, this is Jeremy Mint saying bye.
Alrighty, that brings us to the end of another TARDIS Library. Short and sweet this time around, just how I like it. Hope you enjoyed it too. Hope you're enjoying the Titan comics and hearing about them. And earlier, of course, I was talking about the About Time series. Do give them a look if you're in the market for some Doctor Who reference material. Even if you're not and you've not come across these before, look them up. Look them up. I think the average person who wants to sort of reach up and sort of think a bit more and understand a bit more about Doctor Who would be well served by them. That's my thought. Anyway, until we meet again on the TARDIS Library or the Doctor Who Show or wherever it might be, take care of yourselves. I'm Rob Irwin. See you later.